Let me welcome the Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, into the studio. Hello, George.
Hello. Good to be here.
Now, you were, before we get on to the meat of the referendum, you were in the chamber for the tributes to Joe Cox. I think you went, I saw pictures of you coming out of the memorial service. What does it tell you about our country that there's been such an outpouring of emotion for a woman that before Thursday's tragic events most people had never heard of?
Well, I think it says a lot of good things about our country, actually. I mean, I think the nation's been horrified by her death and the manner of her death. But I think what I've been struck by over recent days is the way the nation has celebrated her life. And the more you discover about what she did before she got into politics, working for Oxfam, working to help people in some of the poorest and most war-torn parts of the world, her commitment to Yorkshire, where she grew up, and all of that before she even arrives in the House of Commons, I think you're rather humbled by an incredibly good person, a good-hearted person, and then you are reminded that she has been crudely snatched away from us.
When I saw the TV pictures of you coming out of St Margaret's, you looked quite emotional. A lot of the politicians that I saw actually looked rather emotional. People think of politicians as just hard-nosed, not a care in the world. It's not quite the picture, is it?
Well, I don't think anyone in that chamber of the House of Commons this afternoon, with her family up there in the gallery overlooking the chamber, her young children, very young children, her husband, her sister and her parents, it was very, very harrowing to be there. And, if you think about I'm a father of two children, and you think, like you always do these things, God, there, but for the grace of God, go all of us. And you think of the kids, and then you can't help but find it a very emotional occasion. But it was not just sad. I mean, it's very odd to talk about a mother who has just been murdered, after all, in the presence of her children. And I think the family wanted the children, though they're very young, to be there to see this occasion so that later in life, they would not feel they had not been there. But it was also a celebration of a life, and there were some incredibly moving speeches by people who knew Jo better than I did, like Rachel Reeves, who's an MP in Leeds, Jonathan Reynolds as a Labour MP. These are people who had known her for many, many years, and there were a lot of tears welling up. And then at the end, there was just a big spontaneous round of applause, which, as is not really what you're supposed to do in the House of Commons, but felt very appropriate. And everyone was wearing, I've got on my lapel of my jacket here, this white rose. So everyone was wearing the white rose of Yorkshire. And then quite a lot of people were wearing suffragette colours, which are purple and green. So green and purple ties for the men, and women wearing green and purple jackets and the like. So, it was a big kind of show of unity. And it's just a reminder that we're all engaged in fierce political arguments. We've got one going on at the moment, of course, about the referendum. But in the end, we all believe in public service, and we're all trying to do our best. And, of course, not everyone agrees with what we do, but the motives of most of the people I've ever come across in politics on all sides are very good motives.
My colleague Nick Ferrari had Nigel Farage on his show earlier. I don't know if you just want to put the headphones on. I just want to play you a clip from that and get you to react to what Nigel Farage said.
What we're seeing here is the Prime Minister and the Remain campaign trying to conflate the actions of one crazed individual with the motives of half of Britain who think we should get back control of our borders and do it sensibly. And I think that's quite wrong the way it's being done.
Why do you think he said that?
Well, I don't know. You'd have to ask Nigel Farage. I mean, I think what's happened is Nigel Farage has taken over the Leave campaign. I've got lots of people I know very well in the Leave campaign, and they didn't want to start off this campaign where they got to the position with only a couple of days to go to polling, where Nigel Farage appeared to be their principal spokesman. But they've allowed him to take it over. They've allowed him to just talk endlessly about foreigners and immigration. And of course, there are concerns about immigration, but it is not the only issue at stake in this referendum. I think he misjudges the new mood of the nation. The nation is taking its responsibilities very seriously this Thursday. Everyone listening to this program knows they've got a very big vote, probably the most important vote they'll cast in their lifetime. And I think people want to hear now facts, reasoned argument, rather than, you know, inflammatory rhetoric and baseless assertion.
Do you think that, therefore, I mean, what you're effectively implying is that there's been an absence of leadership in the Vote Leave campaign by your colleagues, Boris Johnson and Michael Gove, because they have failed to effectively shut Nigel Farage up?
Well, I don't think they have, you know, collectively, the Leave campaign, have effectively made the case for Britain taking this very big step of tearing up its relationship with its closest friends and allies. And they've allowed, you know, quite a lot of baseless assertions to become the bread and butter of the campaign. You know, claims about the fact we'd get money back from the EU when, you know, frankly, every independent analyst says that's not true. Claims about Turkey, which are
not true.
Yeah,
I mean, we'll come on to Turkey, but
in the end, you know, you are responsible for the campaign you run in public life. And I think it's interesting, you know, we're talking at the end of a day when one supporter of the campaign side of Arsi has said she doesn't want anything more to do with it. She's supporting Remain. Last week, we had a very respected and independent MP who's given me plenty of trouble in the past, Sarah Wollaston, saying, I don't want to have anything more to do with this Leave campaign. You know, so they are losing support as we approach the key moment when people get to vote. And I think that's because they've allowed voices like Farage's to take control, and that means that the vote is a vote on Farage's vision of Britain, which I think, you know, in London people will reject, but I think people will reject around the country.
Did you watch David Cameron with David Dimbleby last night on Question
Time? Yes, I did. Yeah.
So you will have seen when he said it's wrong to scare people as Leave have done, the same message as you've just given, and then 30 seconds later he said ISIS would be very pleased if we voted Leave. I mean, how do those two sentences match up?
Well, I think it is true to say that our friends in the world want us to stay in. Every country that's ever wished us well works with us now to keep our country safe and keep terrorists at bay, wants us to remain in the EU, and basically our enemies in the world want us to leave. President Putin has given as much as a nod and a wink to say that he would like Britain to leave.
Has he?
Yes, he has.
How has he done that?
But he was just answering questions the other day, saying refusing to be drawn, and he's the only, as far as I see.
How is that a nod and a wink?
Well, because every other country, from the United States all the way actually to China, has very clearly said they want us to remain, and so you have to look at your friends in the world. There's a dangerous world out there. People know that, and we should be cooperating with our allies. You can't tow this country off into the middle of the Atlantic. We are part of the European continent. We always have been. We always will be. And we have do we work with our neighbours? Do we cooperate with our neighbours? Do we try and get along with our neighbours? Do we work to sell things to our neighbours and they can sell things to us?
None of that would change after Brexit, though, would it?
Well, I'm sorry. I think it would. And it would change because you would be breaking apart the system of cooperation we've had with our European neighbours. You would be tearing up the trade agreements we have with our European neighbours. You would be tearing up some of the security arrangements we have with our European neighbours, like the European arrest warrant. So those are real facts on the ground, and it would take many years to try and replicate even some of those things.
On the back of which particular fag packet did you construct your punishment budget?
Well, obviously, that is a completely loaded question, Ian. Let's start with the facts, right? The facts are this country will be poorer if we leave the European Union.
That's not a fact.
Well,
that's an opinion.
Okay,
that's an assertion.
Let me put it like this. It is an opinion shared by the Bank of England, the International Monetary Fund, the OECD, 10 Nobel Prize-winning economists who've written today to a newspaper, to the vast majority of large businesses in this country, to a majority of the small and medium-sized businesses in the country, to basically every respected independent think tank in Britain and in the world. They all take the view that Britain is poorer. And you can go to the London Stock Exchange, you can go to the money markets out there, and real people are voting with real money. And every time the opinion polls show that it might be a Brexit, people mark down sterling. And that's real people taking their money out of this country. And it's all right for them because they're international investors and they can move their money out. But the people listening to this programme cannot move their money out of it.
But you have spent the last 6 years trying to turn around the British economy from the crash of 2008. And you would say you've done it very successfully. So why on earth would you support having a referendum which could lead to this economic collapse of which you were warning?
Because I believe in democracy. This issue has hung over Britain.
Even if it bankrupts the country.
You and I have known each other for, I don't know, 20 years probably. And we have been talking about Europe. We know this has been a big issue hanging over our country, certainly all my adult lifetime. And this is our chance to resolve it. We talk a lot about the risks of leaving, and those include, by the way, a big hole in the public finances, because the country isn't as rich as it would have been, and that means you don't have as much money coming into the exchequer, and that means you don't have as much money for the health service and the like. And we know that that is a risk, but let's think of the upside. If the country votes to remain on Thursday, we're going to wake up on Friday, and this huge issue that has been dogged Britain for years and years will have been resolved.
Will it, though?
The uncertainty will lift. The investment will flow in. The jobs will be created. You know, there's a big positive, well, you know, on the back. There's a risk to be avoided, but there's a big, big positive.
Let me put I know politicians never like in dealing in hypotheticals, but I'm going to put a hypothetical to you that you win. Remain wins on Thursday, but only wins by 51-49 or 52-48. Now, you know as well as I do that the Philip Davises, the Peter Bones, the Philip Hollowbones of this world will not let this go. So you can't say that it's been resolved for a generation on that kind of result, can you?
Well, I think you can say it's been resolved for a generation. You were mentioning some of my respected Conservative colleagues. But in the House of Commons, there are 650 MPs and about 500-odd want to remain in the EU. In the Cabinet, there are 28 people who sit around the table. 24 of the 28 want to remain in the EU. If you've also got a majority of the British people in this referendum saying we want to remain in the EU, then that is the issue resolved. But, and this is a crucial point, and, you know, I would describe myself as a Eurosceptic who wants to go on fighting for reform in Europe. That does not mean the fight to go on improving our European Union ends on Thursday. But I'll tell you what does end. If we walk out the room and we quit, then we're not going to have any influence over an institution that, whether we like it or not, will be there for the rest of our days influencing this country.
In your so-called punishment budget, I know you're not calling it that, but that's what other people are calling it. There's all sorts of tax rises threatened.
Let's be clear, the Leave campaign.
All right, okay. There would be all sorts of tax rises, income tax, inheritance tax. There would be spending cuts. You've warned that the NHS would be cut by £2.5 billion, the defence budget reduced by £1.2 billion, education spending down by £1.15 billion. What about the international aid budget?
Well, that, you know, obviously if the GDP shrank, that would be marked down as well. But look, I would make this point, which is, you keep describing it as my budget. I stood...
Hold on.
I stood next to Alistair Darling, right, the last Labour Chancellor, when I presented
that. Well, he's not the Chancellor, you are.
But that was the first time, probably the last time, that the two of us have ever shared a platform. And then it was our joint judgment... a judgment both therefore of a Conservative and a Labour Chancellor that the country would be poorer, and because the country's poorer and there's more uncertainty and we're trading less with these key allies and partners of ours, there's less money coming into the exchequer, and you have a choice. You can either raise taxes to get more money in, or you can spend less. But the truth is you probably end up doing both, and you can't do that. You can't fill a big hole like that,
no,
with just some minor taxes and some minor spending cuts. You've got to go to the big taxes and the big spending departments like health and education. And
even though they're ring-fenced.
Well, look, that judgment that we made, as I say, a judgment not just made by a Conservative Chancellor, but a Labour Chancellor as well, that judgment was backed up by independent organisations like the Institute of Fiscal Studies and the IMF.
I know,
but you get in this campaign at the moment, there's a kind of down with the experts. We don't want to hear from the people who know what they're talking about. We want to hear from the people who don't know what they're talking about.
I want to hear from you. I don't want to hear from the IFS on this. I want to hear from you. And in the last Conservative manifesto, you made clear that health would be ring-fenced, education would be ring-fenced, you've given a commitment to increase spending on defence, and international development would be ring-fenced. And now, a year later, when you knew that you would be having a referendum, you're now effectively saying, well, all bets are off on that. That promise meant nothing.
The one thing we've learnt over the last 8 years in this country is you cannot spend what you can't afford as a country. And if the country is permanently poorer, if the country is earning less money in the world, if the country has cut itself off from its neighbours, it has less money coming into the exchequer. Now, there's no, you can't magic up the money. No. You've got to do something about it. And that's what we learned over recent years.
The timetable here is interesting because it will take at least 2 years for us to divorce ourselves from the EU if we vote to leave on Thursday. And yet, you said, standing alongside Alistair Darling, that there would have to be an emergency budget. Now, you didn't actually put a specific time on it, but everybody interpreted that as sometime very, very soon. Now, what's going to change in the next 6 months that would mean that you would have to have an emergency budget?
Well, because there would be an immediate question mark over the state of our public finances. It wouldn't just be when we left in 2 years' time that the economic hit would come. It would start to come next Friday, this coming Friday. That's when the uncertainty would start, the questions about first thing on Friday morning, you'd have to see what the financial market reaction would be. And you had on this programme the head of the London Stock Exchange telling you that thousands of jobs, I think he said 100,000 jobs would go in financial services.
Do you agree with that?
Well, that is, I defer to his expertise on this. But I tell you what, I stood alongside the head of an American bank in front of his workforce a couple of weeks ago who said, of the 16,000 people he employs in Britain, 4,000 of you, he said, will have to go. Now, those are real lives.
That was bullying his workforce into voting Remain, wasn't it?
That is real lives, so, real people's jobs.
So you expect him to issue 4,000 redundancy notices on Friday morning?
Do you know, the problem with the leave argument is every time a business comes out and says, there are real consequences here, we're having to delay investment, you know, we can't hire new people, we might have to lay people off, they say, oh, well, don't believe them. Well, I do choose to believe some of the, you know, businesses that are making real decisions out there in the real world, small businesses that are worried about what their future is going to look like if we tip into recession after voting to leave. I do worry about those things. And today, real people with real money are voting with their feet because car purchases are down, house purchases are down, people are waiting. Now, if we vote to remain, I think there will be a quick snapback. Decisions that have been delayed will then be taken and investment will come in.
So your fear...
But, you know, why are people delaying now buying a home or buying a car if they weren't fearful of the consequences of a vote to leave?
I think that anybody on the leave side of the argument should accept that there will be at least short-term bumps in the economy. I mean, that to me seems as clear as night follows day. But do you not think that there is an argument for the long term that actually it could be a rather good thing for the economy?
Well, look, let me take that argument seriously. First of all, the so-called bumps in the road that you describe, that's a real person losing their job, unable to provide for their family, out there on the dole looking for work. That's a real family seeing their income cut. That's the value of someone's pension that's fallen. So you can dismiss them as bumps in the road, but they're real things. Right. Now, hold on, let me then come on to you. See, you would have to be so sure that it was worth inflicting that pain on people. Again, a totally voluntary decision by this country on Thursday. We want these bumps in the road. You'd have to be so sure that the future that would be brighter. But I see no evidence of that. Indeed, quite the reverse. I see a country that would be permanently poorer because we would not be trading as much with our European neighbours as we do today. And I don't think anyone has seriously argued that by being outside the EU, we would do more business with France, more business with Italy, more business with Germany. And if you want to do more business with China, which, as you know, I'm the first to say we should do, you know, Germany does three times as much business as we do with China, and they do it from inside the EU.
Let's return to Friday morning and what could possibly happen. Do you think that there will be people who have redundancy notices issued to them by, for example, the bank that you talked about? It's JP Morgan, I think.
Well, I think that will start to happen very quickly, sadly. I mean, like
Friday morning.
Well, I think on Friday morning you'll see the first reaction will be in the financial markets because they've placed all these bets that they will move money out of Britain if Britain votes to leave. And as I say, it's all right for the international investors. And this is why I always say, you know, Brexit's okay if you're very rich. But for the rest of the country, you know, who have to live with the consequences of this vote, not just, by the way, on Friday morning, but for decades to come, They haven't got anywhere else to go. If, we live in this country.
If the financial markets do plummet on Friday, would you have to consider suspending trading on the FTSE?
Well, look, the Bank of England and the Treasury, the Governor Carney and myself, you know, we have, of course, discussed contingency plans, but the sensible thing is to keep those secret and make sure you are well prepared for the whatever happens. But if you set them all out in advance, then you rather undermine the power of those plans.
You are taking contingency plans.
We are doing. I have a responsibility to the people listening to this program to do what I can to protect them. But I have to tell you that you cannot, in the end, protect people from the economic shock that leaving the EU would bring about. And again, you don't have to just listen to my judgment. You can listen to the judgment of people who've been on this program in the last couple of hours, like the head of the stock exchange, like the Nobel Prize winning economist today, like all the car manufacturers today, okay. Like, by the way, everyone from the Football League to Richard Branson have been speaking today. A whole host of people in a whole range of different businesses, small and large, all telling us the same thing. And I think people will want to think about that before they cast their
presumably
vote.
You have been planning for a leave vote because the polls are so close, it could happen. How many Treasury civil servants have you got planning for Brexit?
Well, the thing we're planning for is the contingency plans for dealing with the financial stability consequences in the immediate aftermath of a vote to leave. We have not got plans for, you know, what you then do for
really?
Britain. Well, no, because it's
I'm
not...
I'm astonished.
I don't think why you should be astonished.
Well, I'm astonished because the polls are neck and neck, and surely a responsible government would be planning for what would happen.
As the Leave campaigners reveal all too often, they don't have a plan. And
no,
we would have to face the very serious consequences of tearing up our trading deals with all of our neighbours and indeed many other countries.
But you haven't planned for that.
No, we haven't, because we're arguing the country should remain.
But why in a general election? The civil service, they plan for all sorts of eventualities for different types of government. Surely the civil service are planning for what would happen if we vote leave, because otherwise you have a cabinet meeting on Saturday morning, do you? And everyone sort of looks at each other and thinks, well, you've got a plan because I haven't.
Well, I'm afraid that is the reality that Britain would face.
Seriously.
Well, Britain does not have a plan for Brexit, right? We have an immediate... we will have to deal with the immediate financial stability consequences, but they could be potentially very difficult for the country. And then you're quite right. Britain doesn't have a plan for Brexit. And do you know what? It will take years and years. I would hazard I could come back here on this show in 10 years' time. We'll still be talking about how we re-establish a trade deal with France and Germany and Italy. We've got these things at the moment. Why would you tear them up and throw them away? For what?
It doesn't matter what side of the argument you're on this. I think the British people will expect their government to plan for whatever happens, particularly as around 50%. It may be 51, it may be 53% if there's a leave vote.
You can't plan when you cannot answer the basic questions, and it's up to the Leave campaign to answer, do you want to be in the single market? Do you want to have a trade deal with France? If you have a trade deal with France, like every other European nation, are you prepared to pay into the European budget? You know, those are the basic questions that the Leave campaign cannot answer.
No.
It's not for me to come up with their plan. They haven't got a plan. And I would suggest to people, if you're looking at any kind of election and one side has no plan, then I would steer well clear.
I would not expect you, even if you did have a plan, to come on this programme and reveal it to me, but I would expect you to have some sort of plan, and I think most of the British people would expect that, because what it effectively means, surely, is that you will be among the first people to lose their jobs on Saturday morning if you have no plan. How can
The country has no plan, because Brexit involves tearing up your trading...
You have no plan either.
The country has no plan, because... Let's be clear, it would take years to disengage from the EU, years of economic hardship as a result, years of a small business not knowing where they're going to trade, how to invest, what the rules are going to be about the products and services they provide. Right? That is the reality. So, there isn't some... I know. You know, you get the Leave campaigners come on here and glibly say, we've got it all worked out. We can't tell you anything about it, but we've got
actually,
it all worked out.
Actually, they haven't said that.
Well, they don't.
I've got Michael Gove coming on tomorrow, and I will put that to him. But, I mean, you know as well as I do that in the Ministry of Defence, they have whole teams of people wargaming all sorts of different scenarios all over the world, just in case something's happened.
But these are basic...
And yet you're telling me in the Treasury that you've got no one doing that.
Because I don't see how UK, you know, the people in the Leave campaign are saying, we will have all the benefits of EU membership without the costs. That does not exist. There's no plan in the world that can deliver that. And as a result, people should reject that uncertainty. Let's wake up on Friday morning in a country that is growing, that is creating jobs, that is providing more economic security for our citizens. Let's not wake up and wonder, as a country, what the hell do we do next?
Would you like to see Turkey become a member of the EU?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen, and it certainly should not happen at the moment.
Why is it then, on the British Embassy website in Ankara, they say this: we have a dedicated team working on projects to improve Turkey's prospects of joining the EU. We're improving ties between British and Turkish companies to ensure that we meet the target set by the British Prime Minister and his Turkish counterpart in 2010 to double bilateral trade by 2015. I mean, there are Foreign Office civil servants working on Turkey's prospects of joining the EU.
You know, look, I think this is one of the most outrageous pieces of scaremongering you've had during this whole campaign. I was 16 when Turkey applied to join the EU. I'm 45 now. It is going to be decades before they do. But is Turkey an important country in our world? It's a member of NATO, an organisation, by the way, that the Leave campaign like to talk about, and I'm very proud that Britain is part of. It's in our interest that the Turkish economy grows. It's in our interest that Turkey moves more towards human rights and democracy than it does at the moment. So, of course, you help Turkey do those things. Is it going to join the EU? No, it is not. And you know, Ian, you're an astute observer of these things, that if people put up posters of Turkey saying Turkey is joining the EU, they are designed to scare people, but they are not true. They are not an accurate reflection. And in the end...
Would you veto Turkish membership?
Well, if I was asked today, yes. Right?
Well, why couldn't the Prime Minister say that last night?
Well, that's
night?
What he does say.
No, he didn't say that.
Hold on.
He went all around the houses to avoid saying that.
If Turkish membership came up today, we would veto it because they had not completed any of the things that are required for Turkey to join the EU. So it's a complete red herring. And you've got these claims about Turkey, about money coming back if we leave, when money would be lost. You've got claims about a European army when no such thing is going to exist, and we've got to veto it.
Well, it is going to exist.
Oh, that is just nonsense, Ian, and you know it.
No, I don't know. I've seen the papers from the European Commission.
Hold on. There are only two...
We can veto it, you're right.
Yeah. And who, by the way, in Europe, who have got the two large armies, Britain and France. So we are not going to have these things. And look, of course, I respect people's right to make this decision on Thursday. That's why I campaigned a year ago so hard to give people a referendum. But let's not exit the EU on a series of false stories, myths, irrational arguments. You know, let's have the facts, the rational debate. Let's listen to the experts, not dismiss them. In the end, people got to know you're walking through a one-way door. If we vote to leave, there is no return. There's not going to be any buyer's remorse. We can't wake up and have this interview in a week's time and go, oh, we made a mistake, we want back. You know, we are going to live with this for decades to come. So even if you are not convinced we should remain in the EU, I would say for the next generation who are going to live with this decision long after you and I are gone, we should vote to remain.
What about your own future in the case of Brexit? The Prime Minister says he fully intends to stay if we do vote to leave. Do you think that you could reasonably stay in position when you've made all of these blood-curdling threats that you have?
They're not. This is my assessment as the country's chancellor for the last 6 years of what is going to be required if we vote to leave. It's an assessment shared by the Labour chancellor, the IMF, the Bank of England and the like. And of course, you know, I serve as Chancellor at the Prime Minister's disposal, and we would have to make the best of a very bad job. But I'm passionately, in the next couple of days, campaigning so that people understand the consequences of this vote. There's a big positive reason to remain in the EU, So we're stronger, we're safer, we're better off. There's nothing more positive than opportunities for people, jobs for people, you know, the prospect of us working with our neighbours to solve the big challenges we face in the world, like terrorism.
Michael Gove said he would sacrifice his cabinet position for a Leave vote. I mean, would you be willing to do the same for a Remain vote?
It's really not about my job, right? This decision,
you've made it about your job, with certainly with the punishment budget, because many of your MPs, many of your, even some of your former supporters, they think that you have basically sacrificed your chances of being the next Prime Minister.
We are going to be living with this decision long after you and I have departed from this studio and from the jobs we do, right? This is something that we're going to live with for decades. Don't walk through a door you can't walk back through. Don't make an irreversible decision to quit. It will damage our economy, damage people's jobs. We're stronger, safer, and better off inside the European Union.
Chancellor, thank you very much indeed.